from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, January 5th, 2023. Coming up this hour,
more setbacks for Kevin McCarthy in his quest to be Speaker of the House.
Amazon is cutting more than 18,000 jobs.
The Fed pushes back against rate cut bets as it tries to tackle inflation.
And investors await two more key readings on the labor market ahead of tomorrow's jobs report.
Mourners pay their respects at the funeral for former Pope Benedict. Plus, President Biden says he intends to visit the U.S.-Mexico border. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Knicks pulled out a narrow home win over the Spurs. The Nets' win streak ended at Chicago. The Devils won in Detroit.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow in U.S. stock index futures. They're a little change to lower this morning. We check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg with S&P futures, little change. Dow futures, also little change now. And NASDAQ futures down about 0.1% or about 15 points. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. 10-year treasury down 7/32. Yield 3.70%. Yield on the 2-year 4.38%. Nathan.
All right, Karen. We'll have more on the markets in a minute. But first, the latest on the political turmoil in Washington. The House has adjourned once again without electing a speaker. Let's get the latest from Amy Morris in our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
20 hardline conservatives are blocking GOP leader Kevin McCarthy's ascension to House Speaker, and Pennsylvania's Scott Perry is one of them.
Because we all acknowledge and we all know that Washington is broken, we must take a new path.
Florida's Kat Kamick called on the GOP to support McCarthy.
He has proven that he is willing to stand up in the face of critics and not only prove them wrong, but work with them.
House Republican leaders held a meeting late yesterday to hammer out a deal. Still no resolution. Lawmakers reconvene at noon today to begin a seventh round of votes. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thank you. But the standoff on Capitol Hill is getting attention from the White House. President Biden says he hopes Congress can, quote, get their act together.
To be able to have a Congress that can't function is just embarrassing. We're the greatest nation in the world. How can that be?
President Biden says dysfunction within the GOP is not a good look to the rest of the world.
Now we're getting reaction from former members of Congress as well, Karen. Democrat Tim Romer is a former representative from Indiana. He says Republicans voting against McCarthy seem determined to take him down, and Democrats have little reason to come to his rescue.
The Democrats are in a very good position right now. There is no incentive for them to help Kevin McCarthy out of this deep, dark well and hole that he has dug for himself.
Former Congressman Tim Romer was a guest on Bloomberg Sound On with Joe Matthew. You can catch the program weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and listen to the show on demand wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Nathan, another major story we're following this morning brings us to Amazon. We're learning job cuts at the company will be greater than initially anticipated, with Amazon planning to eliminate over 18,000 roles. Bloomberg's Doug Krisner has the details.
The figure includes cuts announced back in November when about 10,000 workers lost their jobs. Uncertainty over the outlook caused Amazon to accelerate layoffs. CEO Andy Jassy told employees the company typically waits to communicate these outcomes until it speaks with those directly impacted. But the information was leaked to the Wall Street Journal, so the news was shared earlier and directly from Jassy. Most of the cuts are in Amazon's retail division and human resources. Jassy has already eliminated or curtailed experimental and unprofitable businesses. In New York, I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Doug, thank you. And those Amazon cuts come as we await two key readings on the labor market today ahead of tomorrow's jobs report. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Mike McKee.
The Fed is focused on employment. As they raise rates to slow the economy, unemployment should rise. So far, it hasn't. Jobless claims have remained low and steady, although economists say it's difficult to get a clear read on layoffs during the holidays, so don't expect a big change in claims yet. ADP measures the number of people on payrolls. In theory, that should point to the direction of the overall labor market. ADP, however, has diverged from the government's payroll report, coming in weaker for the past 5 months. Bottom line, markets are likely to look past today's data to Friday's numbers, figuring that's what the Fed will be doing. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Michael, thank you. Well, meantime, the Fed is standing firm on its resolve to bring down inflation. And we get the latest live with Bloomberg's Steve Rappaport. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. With that resolve comes a delicate balancing act for the Federal Reserve. In a blunt warning to investors, minutes from the last policy meeting show the central bank will not cave to public pressure to lower interest rates. The Fed is attempting to cut inflation without triggering a recession. But J.P. Morgan chief U.S. economist Michael Feroli tells Bloomberg it's likely too late to achieve that goal.
We are expecting the economy to slip into recession by the end of the year, just due to the lagged effect of the tightening in financial conditions that the Fed has engineered here, as well as the additional rate hikes that they're signaling today.
The notes also highlight the Fed's rate projections being, quote, notably above market expectations from a policy standpoint. Live in New York, I'm Steve Rappaport, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Steve, thanks. Those cautious comments from the Fed are helping fuel some caution in stocks this morning. Yesterday, both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 snapped 2 days of losses. Morgan Stanley chief U.S. equity strategist Mike Wilson, who correctly predicted last year's dismal market, says stocks are heading even lower.
We think 3,000 is a very achievable number, given our confidence on our earnings forecast. Ironically, I would say in the absence of a recession, meaning companies decide to not lay off aggressively, that target looks more achievable. That may sound counterintuitive, but that's the way we're modeling it today. So our bear case is actually kind of we avoid a recession, but not the slowdown.
If Morgan Stanley chief U.S. equity strategist Mike Wilson's prediction comes true, stocks would decline more than 20% from current levels.
And Wilson is not the only big bear on Wall Street. On this morning, Piper Sandler strategist Michael Kantrowitz, ranked number 3 in the last year's institutional investor survey, predicts the S&P 500 will fall 16% to just above 3,200. And again, futures that'll change this morning. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 49 degrees in Central Park. Got some patchy fog this morning. It's going to stay cloudy and cooler today. Highs in the low 50s. Might see a shower tonight as we get down to the low 40s in the overnight hours. Time now for a look at some of the other stories making news in New York and around the world. For that, we are joined by Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Pope Francis delivered the homily at the funeral mass for former Pope Benedict.
Benedetto, fedele amico dello sposo.
In Italian, Pope Francis says, Benedict, faithful friend of the bridegroom, may your joy be complete as you hear his voice. Mourners gathered in St. Peter's Square outside the Vatican today, where Benedict is being laid to rest. George Mason University professor Helen Alvary spoke about Benedict's legacy.
I think he's a model of humility and modesty. He was definitely a servant of the church. He didn't want to come to Rome. He wanted to stay in Germany and remain a theologian. He didn't want to be head of the office of doctrine, but John Paul II really twisted his arm. And he really did not want to be pope. He thought, he was not great enough for it.
Benedict will be buried in the crypt under St. Peter's Basilica. President Joe Biden says he intends to visit the U.S.-Mexico border next week for a firsthand look at conditions as his administration contends with a surge in migration. Biden is already scheduled to travel to Mexico next week to meet with the presidents of Mexico and Canada. President Biden's administration urged the U.S. Supreme Court to uphold his embattled student debt relief plan. The High Court is scheduled to hear arguments February 28th. It's a war of words between New York City Mayor Eric Adams and former Mayor Bill de Blasio's administration. Adams is calling on his predecessor to stop his team from criticizing the current administration.
So I called Bill the other day. I said, Bill, what's going on? What's going on? And then Bill's comms guy, who's probably the worst comms guy in the history of communication.
Adams is talking about de Blasio's former spokesperson, Bill Neidhart, who has been increasingly critical of Adams on Twitter. Adams said they had 8 years to do their job. Once they're gone, they're experts on everything. Heavy rains and strong winds hit California overnight as a powerful bomb cyclone washed ashore, knocking out power. The storm is the third so-called atmospheric river storm to impact California in the last 2 weeks. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update brought to you by Tri-State Audi. Good morning, John Sessions.
Good morning, Nathan. The Knicks lost to the lowly Spurs a week ago in San Antonio. Jalen Brunson didn't play that game. He did play last night at the Garden, and he scored 38 points. Career high in the regular season. Knicks pulled out the win 117-114. The Spurs were coming off a 36-point loss in Brooklyn. The Nets brought that 12-game winning streak to Chicago. It ended. The Bulls won 121-112 despite 44 points by Kevin Durant, the Nets' first loss in a month. Devils won 5-1 at Detroit. They're back home tonight. Road games tonight for the Rangers and Islanders. Fordham lost a tight one at Rhode Island, 82-79. In the Big East, Providence beat UConn. The Huskies were 14-0. Now they've lost their last two. Georgetown, with a home loss to Villanova, has now lost 25 consecutive Big East games under coach Patrick Ewing. Red Sox, having allowed shortstop Xander Bogaerts to become a free agent, losing him to San Diego, holding on to all-star third baseman Rafael Devers. New contract, 11 years, $331 million. The Jets closed out their season Sunday in Miami. It seems as if every press conference for Jets coach Robert Saleh is a discussion of where things stand with the benched quarterback Zach Wilson.
Zach has got all the talent in the world, and we have all the confidence in the world in him. It's just, like I said, from this reset, and we're gonna grind with him. We are. And through hell or high water, we're going to figure out how to get him to where we know he can be.
Mike White will be Saleh's starter on Sunday. The Dolphins are likely to start rookie QB Skylar Thompson. Miami, who, like the Jets, has lost five in a row, can still make the playoffs with a win and a New England loss in Buffalo. John Stashnow, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. And the Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information. Coming up, we'll look at what could break the standoff on Capitol Hill for House Leader Kevin McCarthy. First, futures are trading flat. S&P futures right now down a point. Dow futures down 18, and NASDAQ futures are lower by 8 points. 10-year Treasury is down 7/32. The yield on the benchmark, 3.71%.
Live from coast to coast, from New York to San Francisco, Boston to Washington, D.C., nationwide on SiriusXM, the Bloomberg Business App, and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager, and the focus this morning once again remains on Washington, D.C. The stare down continues between House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy and those 20 and now 20 or so GOP members who seem determined to block McCarthy's bid to become the next Speaker of the House. Terry Haynes is with us this morning now, the founder of Pangea Policy. Terry, good morning. I know we've talked before many times about the four factions you see in Washington, D.C. and the two-party system, and we're certainly seeing two of those factions butt heads this week. What's it going to take for Republicans to get along?
Good morning, Nathan. Happy New Year to everybody on the program.
And yeah, thanks.
And thank you for remembering the four factions. Very important. What's it going to take? I don't see this as close to ending as we begin today. I'll tell you for two reasons. One is kind of a Lucy in the football program. The 20 or so dissidents have a bunch of demands. The demands constantly shift. You can't get to the end of the demands. So that's number one. Number two is what I think of as a supersized problem. What they continue to want to, what they talk about is, you know, kind of the lack of what I'll call kind of conservative focus off in the broader Republican conference on lots of different issues, spending issues, cultural issues, all kinds of other things. And what they really say they want when it comes down to it is outsized influence on policy, on committees, on, you know, kind of the levers that make things work. That's not an attack on McCarthy. That's an attack on the entire conference. In other words, they're directly attacking the other 90% of their fellow members who think that, you know, things can be worked out the way they are. I don't see this as ending real soon. I think they're backing themselves into the corner because what they're doing with their 90% of the conference that they need in order to help make a deal is make the case that if we give in, then the House becomes ungovernable. So you know, I think this is going to take a while, and I think increasingly what folks ought to do is be looking past McCarthy and towards either a more consensus conservative or a more consensus centrist within the on the Republican side.
Well, even if there is a consensus to come forward, Terry, would a consensus candidate be able to meet the demands that those 20 Republicans have? I mean, does it make a difference whether they're making the demands of McCarthy or anybody else?
Yeah, well, a very good question. And part of the reason I think this is going to take a while is because I think what the conference is coming to the conclusion is that you know, we just can't continue to focus on the drip, drip, drip here. It's never going to be enough for these folks. And what I think is going to end up happening is if you end up with somebody other than McCarthy, because it's very clear this isn't really about all the rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic stuff. This is a personal vendetta against McCarthy. If McCarthy goes away, a lot of these issues, a lot of these problems go away. So it's one reason why I think increasingly the Republican conference is going to look to somebody else to be the speaker in this Congress.
So are you saying that they're just going to drop their demands if McCarthy steps aside?
But yeah, I think a lot of the problems will be considered to go away if there's another personality in the speaker's chair, yes.
Okay. What is the possibility that we could see some kind of deal made with Democrats? I mean, that's something that McCarthy had warned could be a scenario if this continues to play out. Could we see a situation where we have some kind of I guess, American version of a coalition government come forward in Congress?
Yeah, it's a very smart question. I think you played a clip from former Congressman Tim Romer, very savvy former Democrat from Indiana, and Tim's point was very simple, that you know there's absolutely no incentive for Democrats to want to work on this. Number one, number two, I know what's one thing that's getting play at least on the Bloomberg site is a proposal by current Congressman Brad Sherman of California that they could probably work with Republicans if they'd agree to increase the debt ceiling, deal on spending, you know, not shut the government down, that sort of thing. Congressman Sherman is always a bit of a freelancer, so I wouldn't take this as wouldn't take his view as some sort of official Democratic position at all. Secondly, that doesn't work with the vast majority of the conference. The idea that they give up effective control on spending and debt limit is something that the Republicans wouldn't accept. So that's a non-starter.
All right. Terry Haynes, founder of Pangea Policy. We'll see how things unfold today as we get ready for round 7 of voting for the next Speaker of the House. As we've been saying all week, it's been 100 years since we've been in a position like this, and it continues to unfold in Washington, D.C. Terry Haynes, founder of Pangea Policy, with us this morning. Futures flat. S&P futures little change to the upside. Dow futures down 3 points. NASDAQ futures down 1 point. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are little changed this morning as investors balance further signs of China's reopening with cautious commentary from the Federal Reserve's latest meeting. European shares paired their declines with a report showing euro area producer prices fell more than expected in November. We check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg. Again, futures are little changed. The 10-year Treasury down 6/32, yield 3.70%, and the yield on the 2-year 4.38%. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The U.S. House will resume session later today after Kevin McCarthy and GOP dissidents failed to reach a deal on the California Republicans' bid to become Speaker. Today is day 3 of the standoff between McCarthy and 20 colleagues withholding the support he needs for the job. 6 votes have failed to elect a Speaker. Pope Francis is honoring his predecessor, Benedict XVI,
Francis is presiding over a mass for Benedict before thousands of mourners in St. Peter's Square. In the NBA, the Knicks won, the Nets and Warriors lost. In hockey, the Devils won. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:23 on Wall Street. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. We're watching shares of Amazon this morning. They're up 2.5% in the pre-market on word now confirmed from CEO Andy Jassy that the e-commerce giant will lay off more than 18,000 employees. That's nearly twice as many as previously expected. Potential sign the tech industry slump may be getting worse. Joining us now for more on this is Bloomberg Quick Take correspondent Alex Webb. Alex, so we knew Amazon was tightening its belt. Should this even bigger round of job cuts come as a surprise for investors?
Well, it clearly has come as a bit of a surprise given the share reaction. They had telegraphed that, well, they've been reported there was going to be something in the order of 10,000 job cuts. So it's almost double that. Let's not forget, though, that, you know, Amazon has in the order of 1.5 million employees globally. It added between 2019 and 2022 a million additional headcount. That's equivalent to the entire US Army. So, you know, compared to that, 18,000 is still a relatively small percentage. The people being affected by the job cuts, it's clearly not a small deal for them. But it means that the share price reaction, 2.5%, when it's 8,000 of the 1.5 million, seems maybe a little bit overplayed. Don't forget, of course, they're also talking about some real estate pairbacks. Amazon's expansion during the lockdowns wasn't just headcount. They also added a huge amount of warehousing, and the general consensus being that they expanded too quickly.
Yeah, so it seems as though this is just a reshuffle, a sort of a return back to a pre-pandemic sort of normal for Amazon. Is that how we should be looking at it?
That's half of it. Look, what happened was with that expansion is if you look at the revenue per employee, so you average out the total revenue by the total headcount, revenue per employee had actually declined over the past few years, which kind of shows how they had expanded too quickly. But don't forget, we also then have the broader interest rate story, which has helped bring the Amazon share price down. It's lost $1 trillion in market cap over the past few months. That means that management, you know, probably feels the need to do something. It's not entirely Amazon's fault. That partly it's to do with the recovery post-pandemic, but it's also to do with, you know, investors being able to find good returns or more reliable returns elsewhere. So you look at those two factors, the operational impact and then the broader stock market performance, and management probably then feels on the one hand the need to do something, but also the opportunity to right size what they would see as right sizing their business, because, you know, they kind of have the air cover to do it.
Yeah, good point about the Fed picture as well. But it's coming on the heels, this confirmed news from Amazon, of Salesforce announcing a 10% staff layoff. What does that say about the tech sector overall?
Well, let's not forget that a lot of these companies, what we would call the tech sector, they are enabling up businesses in other sectors. And Salesforce, you know, a lot of that is sort of the advertising business, right? And advertising is, as we know, something that gets hit hard by economic slowdowns. It's the first thing that companies tend to slash from their budgets. Online sales, of course, have been growing, and Salesforce is a company that enables that. But the pace of that growth has slowed down a bit. So, you know, we're seeing Salesforce, you know, probably preempting some of the broader impacts on its business and trying to get ahead of those effects.
All right. Alex Webb, Bloomberg Quick Take correspondent, with us this morning to talk all things tech once again. And on the word, official now from CEO Andy Jassy, that Amazon will be laying off more than 18,000 of its more than million plus workforce. The shares this morning are higher by 2.5% in the pre-market. Futures as a whole are trading flat. S&P futures little changed. Dow futures are down 3 points. NASDAQ futures little change to the downside as well. 10-year Treasury is down 5/32nds, yield 3.70%. And the yield on the 2-year right now is at 4.38%. Coming up next, your top stories of the morning, local headlines, and a fuller check of markets. First, we check in with Rob Carolin for today's Bloomberg weather forecast.
Some areas of patchy fog around the tri-state area this morning. It looks like kind of a cloudy day shaping up once the fog lifts, 50 to 55 today. Clouds night, maybe a stray shower, 40 to 45. It'll turn partly sunny and cooler tomorrow, highs 45 to 50. Saturday, partial sun near 45. Sunday looks partly sunny as well. Highs, they'll be around 40 degrees. I'm Rob Carolyn with your weekend forecast on Bloomberg 1130.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
We're coming up to 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Innovation Refunds that small businesses impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic may qualify for the Employee Retention Credit. Let Innovation Refunds do the work. To find out now if your organization qualifies for ERC assistance, they've already helped businesses claim over $2 billion in payroll tax refunds. Learn more at GetRefunds.com.
And we're nearly 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We begin with the political turmoil in Washington. The House has adjourned once again after six rounds of voting without electing a speaker. 20 conservatives are blocking Kevin McCarthy's path to the speakership. Now the standoff is drawing negative attention from President Biden.
It's embarrassing for the country. I mean, literally, I'm not making a part of this reality.
And President Biden says the GOP dysfunction is not a good look to the rest of the world. Lawmakers reconvene at noon today for a seventh round of votes.
Ahead of that, Karen, dissenting Republicans don't appear to have a specific candidate in mind for the speakership. That's according to former Indiana Democratic Congressman Tim Romer. He tells us GOP dissenters just want to oppose McCarthy.
These four or five or 20 will see this as a real victory, just taking McCarthy down.
Former Congressman Tim Romer spoke on Bloomberg Sound On with Joe Matthew. You can catch it weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, another major story we're following this morning, Nathan, involves those job cuts at Amazon. The company plans to eliminate just over 18,000 roles, more than was initially announced in November. Most of the cuts will come in Amazon's retail division and human resources department.
As for the broader economy, Karen, all eyes are on the Fed, and the central bank is affirming its resolve to bring down inflation. And Bloomberg's Steve Rappaport joins us live. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Despite that resolve, policymakers say they're not afraid to keep interest rates high, at least in the short term. Minutes from their last meeting note an unwarranted easing in financial conditions, especially if driven by a misperception by the public of the committee's reaction function, would complicate efforts to restore price stability. The central bank's goal is to eventually bring down inflation by 2% or 2% while keeping the economy out of a recession. Live in New York, I'm Steve Rappaport, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Steve, thank you. Well, the S&P and NASDAQ shook off Fed caution yesterday, snapping 2 days of losses. But Morgan Stanley Chief U.S. Equity Strategist Mike Wilson says with earnings around the corner, investors need to gear up for rough days ahead.
We're going to get a nasty earnings recession. And so the companies that can deliver on the cost efficiency are the ones that are going to continue to perform until you fully price, you know, whatever this downturn on earnings are going to be.
And Morgan Stanley's Mike Wilson thinks stocks could decline more than 20% from current levels. Again, futures this morning, they are little change. The 10-year Treasury down 6/32, yield 3.70%. Yield on the 2-year, 4.38%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:31 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has those New York headlines and a look at what's going on around the world as well. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Mourners poured into St. Peter's Square for the funeral of former Pope Benedict. Bells tolled, and the crowd applauded as pallbearers carried Benedict's Cypress coffin out of the basilica and rested it before the altar. Helen Alvary is a George Mason University professor.
He's going to be remembered as one of the greatest intellects in the history of the church, which is saying something in 2,000 years. He is going to be the person who pursued all the great questions in, you know, more than 65 books and probably hundreds of articles.
Heads of state, royalty, and clergy from around the world flocked to the Vatican. It is a war of words between New York City Mayor Eric Adams and former Mayor Bill de Blasio's administration. Adams is calling on his predecessor to stop his team from criticizing the current administration.
I am so tired of the previous administration and their antics.
Adams slammed de Blasio's former spokesperson, who has been increasingly critical of Adams on Twitter. Adams said they had 8 years to do their job. Once they're gone, they're experts on everything. President Joe Biden says he intends to visit the U.S.-Mexico border next week for a firsthand look at conditions as his administration contends with a surge in migration. President Joe Biden said he is considering sending Ukraine American Bradley fighting vehicles to aid the country's defense against Russia's invasion. The Bradley is an armored vehicle capable of transporting soldiers to the front lines while attacking targets with cannon and anti-tank missiles. Rick Singer, the mastermind of the nationwide college admissions bribery scheme that ensnared celebrities and prominent people, was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. 5:33 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update, brought to you by Tri-State Auto. Here's John Stasha.
Thanks, Nathan. San Antonio Spurs came to New York, lost by 36 at Brooklyn, much closer at the Garden. Spurs had a chance to tie the game at the end, but the Knicks held on. 117-114, Jalen Brunson scored 38. Knicks played tomorrow in Toronto. The Nets' 12-game win streak ended at Chicago. The Bulls won 121-112. In the loss, Kevin Durant, 44 points. Kyrie Irving had a 25. Seth Curry, 22. The rest of the team combined for only 21. Donovan Mitchell's first game since he scored 71 points, held to 20, but the Cavs beat Phoenix. Giannis Antetokounmpo was coming off a career-high 55 points, settled for 30 at 21 rebounds, 10 assists. Milwaukee won at Toronto. Lakers played with without LeBron James, who was out sick. They still beat Miami, and Detroit hit a shot at the buzzer for an upset win at Golden State, who had only lost twice all year at home. Devils a 5-1 win at Detroit. DeMar Hamlin said to be showing signs of improvement from his cardiac arrest Monday in Cincinnati. Quarterback news going to Week 18. Washington will have its third different QB in 3 weeks, now going to rookie Sam Howell. Chicago starts Nathan Peterman for the injured Justin Fields, who was trying to set the record for most rushing yards by a QB. Miami will likely start rookie Skylar Thompson against the Jets. Not known yet if Jalen Hurts will return from injury for Philadelphia. The Eagles host the Giants. Jim Harbaugh spoke with the Carolina Panthers, but said he expects to remain as the coach at Michigan. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you for that. And the Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Rupert Murdoch's media empire is recommitting to Manhattan office space after News Corp and Fox signed leases that'll keep the companies in Midtown for another 20 years. New York City will begin to replace nearly 925 of its fleet vehicles with electric ones, thanks to a $10 million federal grant. The funds will be used to buy 382 Chevy Bolts, 360 Ford E-Transit vans, and 150 Ford F-150 E-Lightning pickups. The Department of Sanitation will get 25 hybrid street sweepers. New Jersey's extended its health benefits contract with Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield for another year, even after state officials alleged the health insurer failed to meet terms of the deal. The state will pay lower fees in exchange for reducing the scope of some services Horizon was originally hired to provide. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
All right, Ed, thank you. It is 5:36 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. Starting this week, travelers on U.S.-bound flights from China will have to be tested for COVID-19. Other countries are implementing similar new restrictions. Given the scale of the outbreak currently ravaging China, such moves make sense. But on their own, they aren't enough to manage the global risk posed by the virus. The U.S., for its part, should maintain its efforts to supply China with more potent mRNA vaccines. It should also lead a swift, coordinated global effort to boost genetic sequencing, which can help track variants. Critics of testing before travel are right. It won't prevent all transmission, but combined with common sense precautions, better surveillance, and more vaccines, it should help keep the worst effects of the virus at bay. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. Now, another story we're following this morning. Dell reportedly wants to phase out semiconductors made in China by 2024. According to Japan's Nikkei News Service, the computer maker is also telling its suppliers to significantly reduce the amount of other components produced in China. Dell reportedly wants to diversify its supply chain because of concerns about U.S.-China tensions. S&P futures right now are higher by 1 point. Dow futures are down 1 point, and NASDAQ futures are higher by 6 points now. 10-year Treasury's down 5/32nd, yield 3.70%, yield on the 2-year, 4.38%. Stay with us. We'll get an outlook on this market from Eric Friedman of U.S. Bank Asset Management. He joins us shortly. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures this morning, they're little change to higher. S&P futures and Dow futures both pretty much little change. NASDAQ futures up 0.1%, about 11 points right now. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32nd, yield 3.70%. Yield on the 2-year, 4.38%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.7%, up $1.96 at $74.80 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2% or $3.30 at $1855.70 an ounce. The euro 1.0618 against the dollar. British pound 1.2027. The yen 132.45. And Bitcoin this morning, it's little change. It's at about $16,800. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. The House of Representatives will try now for a third day to lock in a speaker. Disagreements among Republicans led to Kevin McCarthy losing now a total of 6 ballots. Pope Francis is honoring his predecessor, Benedict XVI. Francis is presiding over a mass for Benedict before thousands of mourners in St. Peter's Square. Officials in California ordered evacuations in high-risk coastal areas as a huge storm barreled into the state. It is bringing high winds and rain that threaten widespread flooding and knocked out power to more than 100,000 people. In the NBA, the Knicks won, the Nets and Warriors lost. In hockey, the Devils won. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We're coming up to 5:42 on Wall Street. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. I'm Nathan Hager along with Karen Moscow. Let's take a look at some of the other stories we're watching this morning. Strikes on the British rail network reach a critical peak today. Some of London's biggest rail stations will be closed, while some airports will also be deprived of train service. Union train drivers are walking out following a long dispute over pay.
Well, back here in the U.S., Nathan, the labor market is also front and center, but this time a focus on jobs. Payroll processor ADP issues its employment report for December this morning. Economists are predicting a gain of around 150,000. And Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice has more.
November's ADP data showed a gain of 127,000 jobs, the weakest showing since January 2021. Some industries, notably technology and finance, are cutting jobs or freezing hiring. And yet, as Bloomberg Economics notes, almost half of small businesses report difficulty finding qualified workers. The government issues official employment data Friday, and economists anticipate a modest showing in that report as well. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Vinnie. Turning to corporate news now, yesterday's equity session saw shares of Jefferies Financial Group jump 13%. That comes after a report that Japan's Sumitomo Mitsui Financial Group is considering raising its stake in the U.S. investment bank. That story now from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Sumitomo's CEO says he hopes to make Jefferies an equity method affiliate, and that could involve an interest of 20 to 50%, according to Nikkei. The CEO did not say when his firm might make an additional investment and indicated that such decisions would come once his company holds discussions with New York-based Jefferies and U.S. regulators. The Japanese company already has a stake of almost 5% in Jefferies, part of a strategic alliance reached last year. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Well, one of Wall Street's top bears sees another down year for the stock market. Piper Sandler strategist Michael Kantrowitz, ranked number three in the last year's institutional investor survey, predicts that the S&P 500 will fall 16% this year to a level just above 3,200. The price target is the lowest among Wall Street analysts tracked by Bloomberg. Should that come true, it'll be only the fifth time in nearly a century that the benchmark index suffered at two consecutive years of double-digit declines.
Well, that sets us up very nicely for the conversation we're about to have right now with Eric Friedman, Chief Investment Officer at U.S. Bank Asset Management. Eric, good morning. It's nice to speak with you as the S&P 500 sits around a 3,850 level right now. But we do keep hearing the bears roar. Should the bear case be the base case for this market?
Nathan, good morning and great to be with you. We do think that downside is the more likely outcome, let's call it over the next 3 to 4 months. And so the really rationale behind that, which I think you're hearing across the street, is number one, concerns about earnings estimates, the need for those to come down. And then secondly, just the persistency of inflation and the likelihood that we'll see interest rates probably remain a bit higher. And I think that one of the big reconciliations that has to happen is the Fed's view on rates and the market's view on rates really diverge right now, Nathan. That's something that does cause us a little bit of anxiety over the next couple of months.
Yeah, I guess we're kind of seeing that play out with the action in the futures this morning, kind of a note of caution coming off the back of the Fed minutes yesterday and that warning about unwarranted easing of financial conditions, potentially causing the Fed to act here. Does that change your case on what the Fed's policy path is going to be over the next few months?
Yeah, that reconciliation that has to happen, Nathan, really centers around the idea that the Fed will likely stay more hawkish for longer. And if you look at the divergence in Fed futures in terms of what the Fed has said and then what the market has said, there's about a percent difference between now and the next year. And that's material. It doesn't sound like a lot. But if you look at the levels of concerns in terms of just discounting future earnings, when you have a percent difference and the Fed says, look, we think rates will be higher, the market says, no, we actually think they'll be a bit lower, that's where we do think that more information from the Fed, both in terms of their upcoming meeting in February, as well as more of the speaker series that we'll start hearing more about, we do think there's a chance that the Fed reinforces this idea of longer, of higher rates for longer.
You said that you think there's going to be more downside over the next few months. Let me pin you down a little bit on that. How much more downside do you think there's going to be? And does that imply that you think stocks are going to bounce back in either the second quarter or the second half of this year?
Yeah, we put the downside risk levels. We do think that the possibility of retesting where we came out in the lows of last year is probably a likely battleground, if you will. So let's call it S&P 3600 as a key level. The fact that we couldn't, Nathan, reach 3900 earlier in the week, we think is something to pay attention to. That's, of course, where a couple of big moving averages converge. So we do think that a test of that sub 3,600 level is something the market is going to have to deal with. Now, we do expect there to be a more shallow economic recession. And so our viewpoint, our base case right now is that we likely have a lower trough of activity, but we do think that the duration of that trough, in other words, not so much the y-axis, but the x-axis, really how long that trough lasts will be key. So we do think that the back half of the year isn't going to magically get better, but we do think that there's going to be a shallow down. That's going to allow companies to probably recalibrate, and we think that the tail of this year and the early part of 2024 will be a better opportunity for particularly technology and some of the longer duration, longer earning cycle types of names.
All right. You mentioned technology. Do you see any other pockets for opportunity on that path into 2024 where we could see some upside? We've got about a minute left here, Eric.
Nathan, probably the playbook for us would be to focus on cash flows first. So we like utilities. We like infrastructure. We think that energy still has a decent fundamental case as well. That's the playbook that we'd be involved with as the market really wrestles with this interest rate phenomenon. So that'd be the first part. We do think it's too early on technology. We think cyclicals and value are probably a place that that people can, again, hide out in. But this is probably more of a relative opportunity than an absolute opportunity until we again see more stability with both CapEx forecasts as well as what's going to happen with interest rates.
Really appreciate getting your insights this morning, Eric. Thanks so much for being with us this morning. Eric Friedman, Chief Investment Officer at U.S. Bank Asset Management. Futures this morning, trading flat after those Fed minutes. We got S&P futures higher by 2 points right now. It's been a swing between gains and losses just incrementally on the session this morning. Dow futures are higher by 5 points, and so are NASDAQ futures, actually. And the 10-year Treasury right now, down 3/32, yield 3.69%, and the yield on the 2-year is at 4.37%. NYMEX crude's moving higher, up 2.5% or $1.81, $74.65 a barrel. COMEX gold's down 0.2% at $18.54.70 an ounce. And right now the euro slightly stronger against the dollar, trading at 1.0614. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures are little changed this morning. The DAX in Germany's down 0.1%, and the 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 3.69%. The yield on the 2-year, 4.37%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.6%, up $1.89 at $74.73 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.25% or $5.20 at $18.53.80 an ounce. The euro this morning, 1.0614 against the dollar. The yen, 132.48. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Nathan.
All right, Karen, thanks. It's almost 5:56 on Wall Street. It's time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. And today, we look at one of the most controversial terms in Supreme Court history. 2022 saw the leak of a draft opinion that would eventually overturn abortion rights. There were ethics scandals, a man charged with the attempted murder of Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and public confidence in the court at an all-time low. But you'd never know any of that reading Chief Justice John Roberts' year-end report on the judiciary. For more, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks with constitutional law professor Stephen Vladek of the University of Texas Law School.
This report was most remarkable for what it didn't say about 2022 being this tumultuous year at the court.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think the year-end report, at least as it was originally conceived by Chief Justice Warren Burger, was meant to be a bit more of a sober and transparent reflection on not necessarily individual decisions, June, but on the work of the court and on places where the court specifically and the federal courts in general could benefit from potential legislative reform. And I think what we saw in this year's report is really very little of that. No reflection on where the court is as an institution, no reflection on potential places where changes might benefit the judiciary, really just not much more than an anecdote and a thank you to Congress for legislation that already passed about judicial security.
What was glaringly missing, there was no mention of the leak of the draft opinion in the Dobbs case and the investigation that Roberts had ordered into the leak more than 7 months ago.
I'm not surprised there's no mention of it in the report. I'm a little surprised there's been no mention of it anywhere else. But I think, June, it's a symptom of this broader disease, which is that there are pretty significant issues affecting the Supreme Court that are unrelated to the substance of specific decisions. And by not addressing those issues, what the year-end report does is it says one of two things is true. Either the Chief Justice doesn't agree that these are serious issues worthy of conversation and study, or, you know, he agrees that they're serious issues, but he doesn't think that the political branches should have any role in discussing or responding to them. And, you know, June, I don't know which of those two things is an accurate description of where the Chief Justice is. I think they're both problematic in separate but, you know, equally important respects.
Steve, I'm beginning to think we are not going to find out where the leak came from, not because they haven't found out, but that they're just not going to tell us.
If you'd asked me, gosh, last July, I think I would have predicted this exact denouement, right? I mean, this always had all of the hallmarks of a, you know, don't worry, trust us, we've got this under control. And we can think of reasons why we're never going to find out. Perhaps the Chief Justice did not like the answer when they figured out who the leaker was. Perhaps they really haven't figured out who the leaker was. I mean, whatever it is, you know, I think anyone who thought this was going to be some big public thing, I think didn't fully appreciate how little it is in the Supreme Court's interest to perpetuate the conversation about leaks and its internal decision-making processes.
And that was Stephen Vladek of the University of Texas Law School speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. You can download the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGov. Futures flat. We'll check the business headlines, all the news you need to start your day. Hour two of Bloomberg Daybreak starts right now.